This week is really exciting because this week we are going to delve into Shirat Chana, right? The 10 psukim of song that Chana gives us after giving birth to Shmuel and bringing him to the Mishkan, right? Very, very, very famous psukim, also very difficult psukim, and we're going to try to extract a few different perspectives and see, you know, maybe a new view as to what exactly is going on. Kind of put a capstone, right? We've been looking at Chana the last 2 weeks, so this will definitely be, you know, a good way to cap that off. Before we do, I want to drive something home that we started to develop last week, but I just want to make sure that it's very clear because it's going to be really helpful, I think, for understanding what Chana is doing in her song. We saw a few different parallels between Chana and some of the imahot, right? And in you know, we had the Malbim, for example, who pointed out that the Navi describes Elkanah as marrying two wives, and then it said, right, Shem Achas Chana v'Shem Hashenis Pnina. And the Malbim said the reason for that discrepancy was that initially Elkanah had married Chana. And then after a while, when she was not able to have a child, so they decided that he should take on a second wife, Penina, and writes the Malbim, this is just like the phenomenon of Sarai and Hagar, right, with Abraham. And then even taking a step beyond that, the phenomenon of the woman who is barren, right, who desperately wants a child, the woman who has a co-wife who is having children while she is not, right? And there are struggles and strife between the two women. Immediately brings to mind Rachel, right, in this week's parasha. And then especially, actually for this, we should load up the screen share, right? We consider that not only, you know, do Chana and Rachel have in common that they're both barren and there's a co-wife who's not and there's a struggle, but they don't get the needed support from their husband, right? You have both Rachel and Chana have the moment where there's this conversation between them and their husbands, and it doesn't go well, right? We had Chana last week who's not eating the karbanos because she has no appetite, and Elkanah turns to her and says, "Remember la mesivki," right? He's very nice, but he doesn't get it. Why are you crying? Why don't you eat? Right, aren't I as good to you as 10 children? Whatever exactly that means, it's not what Chana needed to hear. And this week's parsha as well, right? Rachel doesn't have any children. She goes to Yaakov, Hava li banim v'im'ayin mesa anochi, give me children. If not, what good is my life? And Yaakov doesn't get it either, right? Vayichar yaf Yaakov v'rachal v'yomer hasachas elokim anochi asher menam imeich pribaten. Am I God? Right, don't turn to me, turn to David. Very clear. Parallel. In fact, it's one where, you know, if we contrast them, you know, Chana comes off kind of more impressively, right? Because Chana keeps her cool, right? And Chana, you know, just gets up. She doesn't say anything. You know, she doesn't yell at her husband, "What are you talking? You know, you're not as good to me as 10 children. I want a child." She just gets up and she goes to the Mishkan, right? So you have a similarity over there. And then at the moment of redemption. So when the child is born, Torah uses the same word, Vayizkor Elokim es Rachel, God remembers Rachel, right? And then what happens with Chana? So Chana goes back from Shiloh and she has relations with Elkanah. Vayizkireha Hashem, and Hashem remembers her. The same word is used when the child is born. Then both of them thank Hashem in the aftermath of giving birth to the child. Both of them name their child, right? Something reflecting that experience, right? Rachel calls Yosef, Asaf Elokim Escherpasi. God has collected in my embarrassment, right? And Chana calls her son Shmuel because he's been given to her by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So like that's like six or seven different pieces: the barrenness, the relationship with the co-wife, the pain, what's going on with the husband, davening for the child, by the way, right? Rachel davens for a child. Torah says, Vayeshma Eleha Elokim, Hashem hears her prayer. That's something that both Rachel and Leah do. I think actually, I don't think we ever see, at least in the Psukim, explicitly Rivka or Sarah davening for children. The first of the Imaos we see explicitly davening for children are Rachel and Leah, right? Where Hashem hears their prayer. Both Rachel and Leah name their children names to reflect the gratification that their prayers have been answered, and Chana follows suit. So we have all of these parallels between Chana and Sarah, Chana to Rachel and Leah, especially Chana to Rachel in particular. And to some degree, Chana even seems to surpass the level of Rachel, right? One, in terms of how she relates to the husband who doesn't get it, that she manages to keep her calm and just go straight to the Mishkan. And two, I just want to point out, there's this very interesting little possible debate in this week's parsha between the Radak and the Sfarno in understanding what Hashem's reaction was to Rachel. Right, if you think about what Rachel did. So we know that Rachel davened for a child. We also know that Rachel does two other things, right? She has Yaakov marry her maidservant, right? That's what happens immediately after this episode where she has the fight with Yaakov. And the second thing that Rachel does is she has that whole episode with the Dudaim, right? Where she wants the mandrakes, right? That Reuben brought to Leah, which seems like it was supposed to be some sort of fertility medicine or something. So Rachel does not exclusively rely upon prayer. Radak and the Sfarno, I think, might have a bit of a machlokas as how to relate to that. Because right, the Torah says about Rachel, Vayishma ela Elokim vayiftachet rachma. God heard her prayer and he opens her womb. So Radak writes very simply, he says, Vayishma el kol hatfilot shepalala. He heard all the prayers that Rachel had been engaged in, right? How many years is it by now that she's been davening for a child? Okay, right, now the time has come. Chana has been davening for a child since day one, and now we've racked up enough tefillot, writes Radak. This, finally, we reach the point of redemption. Now Hashem hears Rachel's prayer, right? But Radak writes that Chana's been davening, you know, from the very beginning. Sfarno, though, has a bit of a different take, I think, because the Sfarno says, right down here, Vayezkor Elokim et Rachel, here, Shehishtadla leholid, first, Rachel tried to do things on her own, right? She tried to have a child on her own. Bechnisat sarasa leveita, when she brought her co-wife into her house, right? Uveinyana dudaim, in the matter of those flowers. But that does not get results, writes the Sfarno. Vayishma eleha Elokim, Hashem hears her, sheispalala achar sheasta shnei minei hishtadlus, right? So Hashem hears her prayer after she did those two things. Now, right, so the Sfarno might be reading this as a positive vein, right? That Rachel tried to do things on her own and she davened. In theory, you could read this critically of Rachel, right? That she wasn't davening initially. First she tried doing things and then she davened. Not so clear, but right with Chana, all we see is straight tefillah, right? She's like a tefillah purist. So at least in some regard, Chana might even surpass the level of the Imos, right? Depending on your perspective, you could look at it different ways. Certainly, Chana is being put in the same framework as the Imos and Rachel in particular. And the Navi might even be saying that she's reaching a higher level, for sure, in terms of how she relates to Elkanah versus what happens with Yaakov, and maybe also regarding how long and how immediately they turn to tefillah in a moment of crisis. Okay, so I think that's going to be very, very important, because thinking of Chana in the framework of the Imahos, I think, is going to be super helpful when we look at Chana's song, right? So what we'll do is, We'll just read the psukim first. We'll look at two main ways that the mefarshim understand what Chana is doing, and then I think we're going to go back to the song itself and try to show how you need both perspectives for the song to really understand what's going on. Right. So here we go. So right, Chana has just dropped Shmuel off at the Mishkan. Right. We ended off last week, you recall, with that moment, that little showdown, a new showdown between Eli and Chana. Right. And the Gemara's take that that Eli wasn't very impressed with Shmuel. But okay. So now the Navi says, "Batispalel Chana batomar." So those three words are going to be a problem because we know what batispalel means, right? It means nachana, this is prayer, right? But as we'll see, it's not so clear what the actual prayer is in the next 10 psukim. But that's how it begins. Vatomar, Chana said, alatzli bi bashem, right? My heart has exalted in God. Rama karni bashem, my horn is lifted by God. Rachav pi al oivai, my mouth has widened over my enemies. Because I rejoice in Hashem's salvation. Okay, a little interesting that Chana has enemies. That's like a bit of a flag, but okay. Then Chana continues. Next pasuk is praise of Hashem, which is a classic way to begin a shira in Tanakh. Ein kadosh kashem ki ein beltacha. Nobody is as holy as God because no one is. There is none beside you. Ve'ein tzurak elokeinu. There is no rock like our God. Right? It's like a classic praise. Then Chana begins talking to people. And there's a mystery. Who exactly is Chana talking to? So Chana says, Al tarbu tidabru gavoa gavoa. Right? Do not have so much very high, very proud speech. Yetze asak mipichem. Don't let arrogance come out of your mouth. Again, who's Chana talking to? Is she talking to Klal Yisrael? Is she talking to... It's not clear. Who's arrogant? So Chana continues, Kel Deos Hashem, God knows all. Velo niskalu alilos. And he weighs all actions. Chana continues, Keshas Giburim Chatim, the bows of the mighty are broken. The Nichshalim Azruchayel, those who stumbled become strengthened. And it's like an Al-Hanisim theme, right? You know, the weak and the strong. But like, who is she talking about? Sveim balacha niskaru, those who were full have to hire themselves out for bread. Re'evim chadelu, those who were hungry are no longer hungry. Anakara yalda shiva, the one who is barren. Now, the first time that seems to be a clear Chana reference. The one who is barren, yalda shiva, can have birth to seven children. Verabas banim umlala, the one who had many children, now is forlorn or languishing. So you have to get to Pasuk Hey until we have a moment that clearly seems to refer to Chana personally. But like, none of this is exactly clear, right? We have like generic praise of Hashem, and we have, you know, themes of the mighty can fall and the you know, fallen can rise. But it's not so clear what unique message Chana is getting across that we would not have had elsewhere. And it's not clear who Chana is talking to. Okay, the next four psukim are Chana's description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you recall last week, right, the Gemara pointed out that Chana is the first person in Jewish history to refer to Hashem as Hashem Tzivakos, right? You know, God, master of legions or master of hosts. We proposed then that was because Chana's fundamental contribution to Sefer Shmuel is that she has, you know, what we take for granted, but like, how many people do we know who truly internalize this idea? That Chana truly, truly, viscerally understands the unlimited power of Hashem, right? Which we've already seen sets her apart from Eli and from his children. So that theme Chana drives home for the next four psukim, at least. Chana says, Hashem mimisum chaya, Hashem can kill, Hashem can revive. Morid Sha'ol V'ya'al, he can bring people down to the grave, he can bring people up to the grave. Hashem Morish U'ma'ashir, Hashem can enrich, Hashem can make poor. Mashpil Af Miromein, he can bring low, he can bring high. No guarantees in life, and Hashem can turn around anyone's station at any moment. Me'kim Me'af Ardal, right now it sounds like we're getting Halal vibes from Chana, right, that he brings the poor out of the dust. Me'ashpos Yarim Evyon, and he brings the destitute out of the garbage, right? That's like a higher level, right? You know, you have the dal who's in the dirt, and then you have the evyon who's even poorer. That's why matanas evyonim, right? Because it's the completely destitute who are not just in the dust, but they're in the garbage pile, right? Hashem can bring them up as well. The Hoshivim Nidivim, right? Bringing them up to sit with the princes. V'kisei chavod yanchileim, and he can seat them at the seat of glory. Kilashem etzukei aretz v'yashas aleim tevel, because the pillars of earth are God's, and he has set the world upon them. Then Chana says, Raglei chasidav yeshmor, Hashem keeps, you know, guards the feet of his chasidim. But the wicked are going to sit in silence and darkness. Kilo bechavach yigbar ish, right? Man does not prevail through strength. Keep that line in mind. And then Chana concludes, Hashem yechatu mrivav, right? Those who strive with Hashem shall be broken. Alav b'shamayim yireim Hashem, right? He'll thunder against them in heaven. Yadin afsei aretz, God will judge the end of the earth. He knows the malko. He'll give strength to his king, the Areim Karen Meshichah, and exalt the horn of his anointed. Who is this king that's being referred to, right? The Jews do not have a king at this stage in Jewish history, so it's not clear who that's referring to, and that's the end of the Shira, right? So, you know, just a surface read of the song, it feels like, you know, kind of generic. Maybe a little bit typical, right? We have praise of Hashem. Hashem has unlimited power. Hashem can bring people up. Hashem can take people down. You know, and then we have the conclusion, right? Ending on a high note. This sounds like a line that you could have in Hallel, but not so clear what this has to do with Chana's particular experience. Chana's individual experience, right? The woman who we've seen and been introduced to and built up over the first parak of Shmuel, what exactly does that have to do with these 10 psukim? And it's not clear who she's talking to. It's not clear what's unique about the Shira. So you know, that definitely gives some work to do when we turn to the Mefarshim. Okay, any thoughts or questions? So far, that was just like a lot to absorb. Okay, awesome.
Just one comment. The yes. Whole theme of Hashem turning everything around, that's exactly what just now happened to Chana. Everything got turned around. So that theme does apply.
Yeah, for sure. Right. And we're gonna have to emphasize that. Right. That the theme of reversal does seem to apply to Chana individually. Maybe not as extremely as is described in the song, right? I mean, the song is describing people who, you know, the destitute in the garbage heap who now are princes. I don't know if, you know, like Chana obviously went through terrible pain, but having a child, I don't know if that's as dramatic a reversal as the ones that she's describing. But worth thinking about. Yeah, but like, who are the enemies? Right, Chana, her whole contribution was tefillah, right? So like, you know, that doesn't seem to fit in here. Okay, so is it the one basic view in the Mefarshim, right, is to show how really, really there are individual references to Chana strewn throughout the song. The only one that we saw very clearly seemed to be when she talked about the barren woman, right, who has 7 children. Ad akara yalda sheva. Bit of a problem because Chana, and the Navi says that Chana, I believe, has 5 children after this. So the math doesn't totally work out, but the general theme seems to fit, but otherwise not so clear. So Rashi does a lot of work to show how some of the psukim apply to Chana individually. And that's particularly clear in some of the earlier psukim, right? So for example, Pasuk Aleph, when Chana opened, she said, Rachav pi al oivai, right? And that, you know, my mouth has expanded over my enemies. And we were wondering, you know, who are the enemies who Chana is addressing? So Rashi says very simply, Penina, right? The co-wife who's been driving her crazy for years and years. That's the enemy that this is being that this is being addressed to. Next pasuk, which said "Ein tzur kelokeinu," right? There is no rock like our God. So Rashi quotes the Gemara that has a very, very interesting explanation of this line. That what that actually means is Ein Tsayar Kelukenu, right? There's no designer like our God. Why is Chana referring to Hashem as a designer? Because she's describing the miracle of conception. Hatzar Tzura B'Sof Tzura, right? That there's no artist in the universe who's able to design something that is inside something else, right? The conception and then development of the fetus in utero is what makes Hashem's ability to create, right, so far beyond what any mortal can accomplish. Because, you know, Michelangelo can sculpt a statue, right? But nobody could sculpt something inside something else. So Rashi says that's what Ein Tzur Kelukenu is referring to. It is referring to Hashem's ability to develop a fetus in utero. Right. Then al targu to dabru, right? So who are the people who were speaking arrogantly in Pasuk Gimel that Chana called out? Once again, Rashi says that's Penina, who drove her miserable for so many years. And then finally, Ad Akara Yalda Sheva V'Rabapanim Umlala, right? The barren woman who has many children and the one who had many children who's forlorn. So Rashi quotes, frankly, a kind of surprising and disturbing medrash, which some of the other Mefarshim seem to try to pull away from. There is this idea that as Chana continues giving birth to children, Penina loses some of her own. And so Rashi says that's what this line is referring to, right? At the beginning of Shmuel, Chana had no children and Penina had many. And then we get to Parak Beis, Chana is having more and more children, Penina is losing hers, right? So again and again and again, fitting in individual references to Chana. That's what Rashi does. Ma'ari Kra does that as well. Some of the lines in Chana's song, for example, Samachti Bishvasacha, right? I rejoiced in your redemption. So Ma'ari Kra says, well, that's parallel to Parak Aleph when Chana had told Eli that I'm, you know, Rov Sichti B'Kasi, my fury, right? She's miserable. Now she's rejoicing, right? Before Ramah Karni, before I was bent, now I'm standing tall. Okay. So they find a few references in the Pesukim that can refer to Chana individually. It all peters out, though, after Pasuk Vav. And it doesn't seem to completely explain some of the details even in those Pesukim, right? Just one quick example. So, right, Chana had said, Rachav pi al oivai, right? My mouth has expanded over my enemies. And what did Rashi say? That referred to Penina. So just one very simple problem, right? Chana didn't say Rachav pi al oivi. She didn't say, right, over my enemy, right? She said, oivai, my enemies. So it doesn't seem to only refer to Penina. And what about the people with the bows and the breaking of the bow? It doesn't totally seem to cover everything that's going on, right? But that's one part of the puzzle. So a couple of the Mefarshim, Mitzudas David, the Malbim, the Ralbag, so they focus on the last pasuk of the song and have a really essential point about that, right? How did the last pasuk of the song, and you know, the last pasuk should be an important one. So that is that talks about Hashem storming against his enemies and giving strength to the king. And the clear problem here was who on earth is the king, right? There is no king yet. In fact, you know, we're going to jump ahead a few prakim and Shmuel, and right, Shmuel is going to not be so happy when Bnei Israel want a king. So what is going on? So they have, frankly, an unbelievable explanation of the pasuk. It's awesome. It really is. I say that this last pasuk is a prophetic description of Shmuel's career, right? So the first, especially the way Rabag reads it as the beginning of the song refers to Chana individually. And then the end of the song, she transitions from her personal experience to prophesy about the career of her new son. So the way you break it up is as follows. Malbim punctuates it this way, right? Hashem yechatu mirivav, right? God, may his enemies be broken to pieces. So who is that going to be? Who are his enemies, right? I mean, see what he does. Instead of, it's a prayer to God. Hashem, right? May his enemies be broken. May Shmuel's enemies be broken. That refers to the Plishtim. We got the Parak Zion, and we will see Shmuel leading the fight against the Plishtim. Alav bashamayim yar'im, right? May God storm against them in the from Shamayim. Let me point out, what is that anticipating? So we're going to see this in Parak Zion, but when Shmuel leads Bnei Yisrael against the Plishtim, what do we have? We have vayar'im Hashem bekol gadol, right? Hashem terrifies the Plishtim with a terrible thunder. So that is, right, what Chana is anticipating here is Shmuel's career leading Bnei Yisrael against the Plishtim, where Hashem is going to intercede. And we will actually see this, of Hashem storming against the Plishtim. Then Chana continues, Hashem yadin afsei aretz. God, may Shmuel judge until the ends of the earth. So what is that? What is that referring to? Well, Navi is going to describe, let's scroll down for a second, later on in Shmuel's career, after the battle, the Navi describes how Shmuel would travel up and down the entire country judging, right? So yadin ad afsei aretz, judging till the ends of the earth, right? So, you know, judge till the end of the country, right? You know, in modern Hebrew, the aretz, right? Eretz Yisrael. So Shmuel's going to lead the fight against the Plishtim. He's going to judge till the ends of the earth. And then what about the end of the Pasuk? V'itin oz l'malkavi arim karem ishicha. We were wondering who on earth is the king. So Malbim Radak, Metzudas David, Ralbag. So they all say that this refers to the two kings who Shmuel is going to anoint, right? V'itin oz l'malkavi, give strength to the king. That is Shaul, who will actually reign during Shmuel's lifetime. And then Shmuel's going to anoint someone else, right? V'yareim keren mishicho, he'll raise up the horn of his anointed. That refers to David HaMelech, who on the one hand is not going to be called a king because he does not actually rule until Shmuel dies, right? On the other hand, he's the anointed one because he is the true king, right? Ultimately, he's the one who is going to be finally chosen. So you put those two interpretations together, right? And you can have a pretty coherent perspective on the entire Shira, right? That it's a prophetic song in which Chana reflects upon her own experience and then at the end prophesies about the career of her son Shmuel. Okay. Now, that is one take. It still doesn't totally explain everything, right? We're still wondering, you know, who are all the enemies? And there's a lot of focus on the enemies, by the way, right? The breaking of the bows and the casting down of the strong, right? It sounds like Al-Hanisim-esque, right? It sounds like a more national description at point. So I mentioned, you know, a bunch of the Mefarshim who go in the general individual direction, Rashi, Marikra, Ralbag, Metzudas David, Malbim. But the Radak takes a different perspective. And it takes him a little while to get there. But where the Radak finally breaks out and tells you, you have to look at the song from a new perspective, that it's actually about Klal Yisrael in general, is that strange pasuk that talked about the barren woman who has seven children, and the woman who had many children who is forlorn. Rashi quoted that medrash, said it was referring to Chana and Penina. Radak says, I think something else is going on over here, because for sure the barren woman can refer to Chana, but it's kind of difficult to imagine the woman with many children being Penina. He says, in fact, we know very well what the prophetic symbol of the barren woman is, right? Who is that? It's Klal Yisrael. Rani akara lo yalada, right? Yeshaya's nevuah about the barren woman who has had no children. So Radak says, you have to understand, Chana's tefillah is actually an extended parable about the fate of Klal Yisrael. And when Chana is describing the low who rise up and the mighty who fall, so it's describing Klal Yisrael, and right, we're down in the dust, right? We're crushed by the other nations. We rise up though, right? And ultimately they fall. It's a national tefillah. And he says, the woman with many children. So those are the enemies, right? That's like Rome, for example, you know, who has so many, states and provinces, right? They're going to collapse. And the barren woman, right? You know, it's Bnei Yisrael, right? Echa yashva badad. We are going to rise up. And he says, you have to look at the Targum. And the Targum Yonasan, which Radak quotes. So better if we could like look at the Pesukim side by side with this. But the Targum Yonasan shows how actually Chana's tefillah, this song is a basically a running prediction of all of Jewish history. From her point where she's standing now down till the end of time, right? So the Pasuk Aleph, where she talks in first person about my enemies, right? Rachav pi al oyvai. So that's describing Israel's enemies in the current generation. That is going to be Shmuel's struggle against the Plishtim, right? Pasuk Beis, where it's describing Ein Kadosh Kashem, right? There's no one who can compare to him, so writes the Targum. That is anticipating the struggle of Sancheirev, because Hashem becomes internationally famous after the death of Sancheirev's army. Pasuk Gimel, which describes Al Tarbu Tzedavru Gavoa Gavoa, talking to people who are speaking arrogantly, and weren't sure who's speaking arrogantly. So Targum says that's the Nebuchadnezzar, right? Nebuchadnezzar, whose arrogance is so famous. Pasuk Dalid, about the bows of the mighty which are broken. So who is the enemy, where we talk about the mighty who fall and the weak who rise? Hanukkah is coming up. That's Greece, right? The next major enemy is Greece. That's being referred to in Pasuk Dalet, writes Targum Yonasan. Pasuk Hey, right? Who are the sons who are becoming, those who are very rich who are becoming poor and vice versa. So Targum says that's Haman versus Mordechai, right? That's the reversal of fortune. Then you have the barren woman versus the woman of many children. That's Yerushalayim versus Rome. And then finally, right, Pesukim Vav through Tess, which describes Hashem Tchias HaMesim and taking care of his Hasidim and bringing vengeance on the Rasha'im. So that's all describing Olam Haba, right, Tchias HaMesim and the world to come. And then the song concludes, Pasuk Yud, with Hashem raising up Yareim Keren Mishicho. So who is that? That's the Mashiach, right? So Targum Yonasan says, right, the whole song is basically a prophecy about Klal Yisrael as a whole. And I mean, it's an incredible parish on the words. So we have then these two perspectives, right? All the Mefarshim who are taking the individual / Chana Shmuel approach to the song. Radakam Targum Yonasan, who are saying, look, the barren woman, we know the barren woman is. That's always the classic metaphor for Klal Yisrael. And this is a prophecy about the fate of Israel. So I think if we go back and look at the Pesukim together, we can see that you need both of these perspectives. And the core idea that I wanted to propose is that if we think of Chana through the frame of the Imahos, so basically Chana is the fifth of the Imahot. She's a new mother of Israel. And that means that her individual life, right, and her individual experience track that of the nation as a whole, right? Ramban's idea, you know, Masa Avo Simin Labanim. So the individual life of Chana and, you know, the metaphorical, the life of Klal Yisrael really are completely in tandem. And that's also important when we think about, you know, the background that we've done to Sefer Shmuel. You know, we saw Pilegesh Begiva, right? And we saw that Bnei Yisrael, spiritually, where are they now? They've abandoned the legacy of Moshe, Pesal Micha, and then they abandoned the legacy of the Avos and the Imahos, Pilegesh Begiva. So Chana's job right now, as we begin the turnaround, right? We begin the spiritual recovery of Bnei Yisrael. Well, step one is going to be to bring back the legacy of the Avos and Imahos. I think that really is what's going on with Chana. So if you look at the Pesukim, we can see, if we read carefully, that the individual and the communal are really intertwined. So for example, Pasuk Aleph begins with Rechalal Chana Davening, and she says, Alatz libi b'Hashem, right? My heart exalts. That sounds individual, right? My personal heart exalts. Then we have Rama Karni b'Hashem. My horn is exalted. We talk about the Karen. That is not normally used to refer to an individual. Right? That sounds much more like a national perspective, right? The horn, the pride. You don't really talk about the pride of the individual. And then Rachav Pi Al Oivai, who are my enemies? As I said, that doesn't really make so much sense on the personal level for it to just be Penina. The salvation. Yeshua often, almost always, is the national redemption, right? If we look at the enemies and zero in on this, so we said it wasn't so clear who Hannah was talking to in Pasuk Gimel, when she's yelling at some people, right, not to speak arrogantly. Truth is, the simplest way to read these Pesukim is who are the arrogant people that Hannah is talking to in Pasuk Gimel? Well, it's probably the people who are going to be brought down low in Pesukim Dalet and Hey, right? It's the Giborim and the Sveim. It's these arrogant people of the coming Pesukim who Hannah is speaking to in Pasuk Gimel. And who are they? So I saw Rav Yaakov Bidan from the Gush. I saw point to this out. I think it's very definitely the cleanest way to read the Pesukim. That will work. Let's look at Pasuk Hey. Who do we know at this point in Sefer Shmuel who we could call Sveyim Balecha Niskaru? Those who are sated with bread, those who are you know, gluttons, who are very well fed, who are going to have to hire themselves out for bread.
B'nai Eli.
Exactly, right? B'nai Eli. And literally, that's going to be the Nevuah, which is coming up at the end of Parak Beis to Eli, right? That you guys are stuffing yourselves on Karbanos. Well, time is going to come. You're going to be fired from the Beis HaMikdash, and you're going to beg the Kohen Gadol, you know, to hire you out to give you a little bit of work to do. So that enemy in Pasuk Hey seems to refer to B'nai Eli. So we have then Penina, right? The Akara versus the Rabat Banim. That's the individual conflict, Chana versus Penina. So looking backwards, we have another enemy running around, not Chana's personal enemy, but the spiritual enemy of Kol Yisrael, right? The sons of Eli. And then if we work backwards to Pasuk Dalid, so then what's the enemy over here? The bows of the mighty, which are going to stumble. So that presumably, I think Ramadan says this as well, refers to the national enemy that Klal Yisrael have right now, which is the Plishtim. We haven't really discussed the Plishtim very much. I'm very excited to when we do. We'll get to Parak Dalet, and I can break up the map, and we can discuss, you know, the national security situation. But, right, we spent so much time focusing on the spiritual disaster that Klal Yisrael are in right now. They're also in a national security nightmare, right, because the Plishtim are growing stronger and stronger and stronger. That is the military enemy that Chana seems to refer to. So she's talking about her personal enemy, and at the same time, she's talking about the spiritual enemy and the military enemy of Klal Yisrael. And she's blending them all together, right? And then if we look at the end of the tefillah, right, which really did seem to refer to Shmuel, right? I think the read of the Ralbag and the Mesudas David and the Malbim was like pretty incredible that you know, that Shmuel is going to judge and Shmuel is going to lead the battle and Shmuel is going to anoint the kings. So, well, think about it. Shmuel is both Chana's personal redemption, right? Because he's the child that she's been davening for years and years and years. But Shmuel, of course, also is going to redeem Klal Yisrael, right? Her son is her redemption and her son is going to be the source of the nation's redemption. So, and then the last point, I don't think this is a coincidence at all. How does the song end, right? The song ends, Vayareim Keren Meshicho, right? He'll raise up the horn of his anointed. Now, right, the Targum Yonason said that referred to the Mashiach. And the Mefarshim here said that referred to David HaMelech. But either way, the Keren at the end of Pasuk Yud, so that I think has to be linked to the Keren at the beginning of the song, right? Where Chana talks about Rama Karni Bashem, right? And my horn has been raised up by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, right, what do we have? We have either the Mashiach or we have David, right, who is the king who represents the entire nation of Israel, as being, right, connected, Pasuk Aleph and Pasuk Yud. So Chana's individual story, right, and her individual struggle and her individual redemption are perfectly lined up with that of the nation, right? Her child is the redeemer of the nation. Her struggle is the struggle of the nation. And for all intents and purposes, that's the story of the Avos and the Imos, right? Yaakov's whole life, you know, especially now Parshas Vayetze, he is a running, you know, prediction of the fate of Klal Yisrael. So Chana then is taking her rank among the Imahos, right? The stories are parallel. The focus on Tefillah, by the way, right? The Avos are the ones who established davening, and we learn the laws of prayer from Chana. So Chana is joining the ranks of the Avos and Imahos. It's a personal slash national song and story, right? That's, I think, major point number one, that the song is operating on two different planes at once because they're related, the national and the personal. And then the other critical point is the theological argument that Chana is making, right? And that was the whole focus of Pesukim Vav through really Yud, right? Where Chana is driving home that Hashem is the one who is all-powerful. At the end of the day, that's basically, right, that's basically going back to basics, right? This is not a Taryag Mitzvos, comprehensive, religious lesson over here, right? Chana's point is extremely basic and extremely simple. There's one God and he is all powerful, right? So what are we doing? We're bringing back, you know, the core lesson going back all the way to Avraham Avinu, right? And that is going to be the running debate throughout the book, right? Do you recognize Hashem's unlimited power and that we may want to have a king, but ultimately realize that Hashem is the one who controls everything? And that's going to be the perspective of Shmuel and the perspective of David. Or we're going to have people who look at God and see limitations. We'll really see that as we get to the battle with the Plishtim in Parak Daled. But that's been the view of Eli and the view of Eli's sons. And it's going to be the view of Shaul, right? That is the core message that Chana is trying to get across, right? So she's taking her rank among the Imahos. Her religious message is just bringing back the core piece of the Bris Avos, right? And now Shmuel's job, right, as we begin to look forward, because now Chana's going to leave the scene, she's done what she had to do. She's turned things around. The rock bottom moment we had with Peleg HaShmegeva, so Chana's contribution has been to get us out of that rock bottom. Then Shmuel's job is going to be to complete the repair, right? So the Bris Moshe that we lost at Pesel Micha and the destruction of the Mishkan, right? The destruction of the legacy of Aaron HaKohen. So that then step two is going to be Shmuel's job going forward. But I think that is a very helpful way to think about the song over here. It really is the capstone of Chana's contribution. Perek Aleph, we saw what she's actually doing personally. And then the song refers both to her on her own individual experience and in parallel to the nation as a whole. So if anyone has any questions, love to hear. Otherwise, looking forward to next week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very good.
Thank you.